Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
It's going good. I am comfortably sitting on my couch.
Right? Look at you. Look at you. Not even in my house. We got a little bit of ice storm thing going on here, so.
Yes, yeah.
Safety third.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And I'm hiding out in my basement where it's quiet, and kids and cats and people aren't bothering me, so it's cold down here, so I'm wearing my bathrobe.
I was going to say, it looks like you're in a bathrobe.
I am.
You're not wearing pants, are you?
I am. I actually am wearing pants.
Don't prove it.
No, it's my Christmas bathrobe, my Christmas present.
Your Christmas
bathrobe. Very comfy.
It's my Christmas bathrobe.
I shouldn't call it a house coat? House coat?
House coat.
What do you call these things?
Yeah. House coat.
Yeah.
Unless you're using it in the bathroom. A lot of, like when you're done in the shower, people put them on.
No, it's fleece, so it sticks to the skin when you're wet.
Yeah. So, yeah, house coat. It's your house coat. Your smoking jacket.
It's my smoking jacket, exactly.
For those that don't smoke.
Anywho, how's it going with you? What's new?
Still living the dream here. Everybody's sort of getting back into work now after the holidays, and everybody, you know, all our customers calling, where's my stuff? Where's my stuff? Have you not paid attention? We've been on holidays. Everybody's been on holidays. It's this big Christmassy thingy you guys keep making me participate in. So, yeah, you'll get your stuff when you get your stuff.
Yeah. Do you know what I'm missing out on? I'm missing out on... I was hoping to be there tonight to say bye to Arietta because she's heading back to Japan.
Oh, yeah, Saturday.
No, I can't say bye to her in person.
What are you doing tomorrow? We're going for ramen. Yeah, we're going for ramen tomorrow night.
Excellent. Right on.
Yeah. Yeah, no, she's only here for a couple more days, filling in lots of time with her friends and doing some shopping, stuff that you can't get in Japan, you can get here and stuff like that. And she's the same as me. She's taller and whatnot and trying to find clothes that fit properly all the time.
Yeah.
Unless you're a hobbit.
Yeah.
So no, she's, you know, it's been a good 3 weeks there. Almost three
Excellent.
Weeks there with her. And everybody was surprised that, you know, she came and all that sort of thing. And lots of surprises to people that didn't know. And just everything, the plans worked out right. And having a good time. Getting to see her friends.
Tracy must have been pretty stoked to have her daughter home.
Well, when she showed up on the doorstep and then she bawled her eyes out, yeah.
Yeah.
My job is done. Christmas is over, right?
Yeah, there you go.
See ya, suckers. Yeah, I'm not a big Christmas fan. Never have been. But, I went to a couple movies, been out to eat a couple spots, went to the ROM and the Royal Ontario Museum and the Art Gallery Ontario and
nice
and whatnot. Right on. So, yeah, doing a lot of stuff that we usually do sporadically throughout the year. So we got to cram it all into a couple of weeks.
Right on.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it'll be nice to get back into the regular routine of things and.
Yeah, I know. Right.
Relax.
Yeah. It was good to kind of shut down a bit for Christmas, relax, spend time with family. And now we're back into the grind.
I find it's more tiring when the actual holiday days, like Christmas Day and Boxing Day, New Year's
absolutely.
Day, are like in the middle of the week.
Yeah.
Like it's going to be awesome next year because Thursday, Friday are like Christmas Boxing Day.
Well, that's
and then you got Thursday, Friday. Saturday,
that's what it was this year.
Is that what it was?
Thursday,
So we'll get the Monday off. We'll get the 4 day weekend. So I guess is it January 1st is now the Friday, so we'll get the 3 days there,
Is that what it works out to?
Yeah, instead of like going to work for 2 days, then you got 2 days off, then you go to work for 1 day, then you got 2 days off, then you go to work for 3 days, and then you got a day off. So, oh my God, I can't keep track of this.
I took them all off.
There's some companies that I deal with, and they close the Monday before Christmas, and this past Monday was their first day back. So they take the full 2 weeks off as well.
Oh, yeah.
But you guys are still working, right? So when we come back, all our stuff will be ready?
Yeah.
Right.
I don't think so.
We try to accommodate as many as we can, but I don't know what it's like at your place, but the flu and this respiratory thing's been going through.
Oh, I know. Yes.
Yeah, we got a few people off still that got hammered with it, so.
We were lucky. Only Stella got sick. Only had one sick person in the household.
What about at work?
So, there was, I think I missed it because some of the people, everybody was away on vacation and stuff like that. But before Christmas break, some people said they're a little bit sick, but not a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't much going around that of anybody that I worked directly with, but I'm sure there was lots.
Yeah, there's a couple of people in our place that just got hammered with it. But then there's a couple other people that are like, I think I got a cold coming on.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it doesn't do anything. And then you just got this. I'm just finding it's so dry right now, I get the nosebleeds.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because it's just dry, and you're like,
need a decent humidifier in your house.
Yeah, well, this is even at work, too. Get one of those little tabletop ones or something, like the personal ones you can get now.
Yeah.
They're about the size of two Coke cans or something like that, and you put them on your desk, and it shoots the water up. So around your computer or something. Yeah. Like if you're doing a lot of work on your computer desk, you have it there so it's humid around your computer.
Yeah.
Where your workspace, I guess. And then you can take it with you. If you want to go to bed, you can put it beside your nightstand or whatever. It's USB chargeable and whatnot.
So. Oh, okay.
Just throw some water in there and then shoots it up and into the...
And that's what you use?
No, I'm thinking of getting one of those.
Yeah?
Yeah, I've heard a lot about them, so...
That'd be handy.
I think I might get one. Give it a whirl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, because having bloody nose just doesn't do it for me. If there's no bar fight involved, I just have no time for a bloody nose.
Exactly. Without violence, it's just a waste of time having a nose.
There's a time and a place for a bloody nose. Driving to work ain't it.
Yeah.
New year, new activity.
Yes.
Doing some Googling and stuff like that. And I came across this new thing. It's being called the next generation of whitewater stand-up paddle boarding. River skate.
You know, it always amazes me because I think to myself, it's like, okay, we've invented all the things that can be invented. Like, what else are going to come up with? And then you see the hydrofoil surfboards, and and it's like, oh, well, holy cow, I didn't know that was coming. And you know, little battery-operated surfers and new paddle things for kayaks. And I did not see this one coming, this river skate.
It looks like it's two-thirds the size of a stand-up paddleboard, got curved-up sides, and you can stand or kneel on it, and you go down white water with a stand-up paddleboard, and you're doing tricks and stuff. On riverskatecollective.com, it says Riverskate is the first of its kind whitewater freestyle stand-up paddleboarding. Small size, low volume, yet radically secondary stability makes any size rapid wave, even flat water, into a magical realm to train and explore. Prototyped as a low volume squirt board, River Skate is the first stand-up paddleboard capable of linked vertical maneuvers like cartwheels, traditionally performed in a playboat. So if you look at a playboat and you take the top off and make it flat.
Exactly, yeah. and make it inflatable.
And make it inflatable. That's you're getting close to what it looks like. After more than a dozen iterations, the R&D led to the integration of grab wings. Those are the parts that come up at the side. This innovation fundamentally increases secondary stability, also enables proper body positioning and bracing with your feet and knees when paddling in different stances. This makes river skate an ideal craft for learning whitewater paddling fundamentals, as well as for experienced paddlers looking for new ways to train and explore the river. So I came across the videos on Instagram. I sent them to you. I sent them to Alan Drummond there to take a peek at these things. And yep. Like dudes are going over small waterfalls, standing up on these things. They're going in rapids. They're, you know, white water. They're doing spins and jumps and all that sort of stuff. Somebody had said it's like a cross between squirt boating and skateboarding.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right. November 2025, they sold their first round of river skates. That's how new this is.
Yeah, it's recent. This is like recent.
A couple months
ago. I think I saw that they sold out in a few days.
Yep. Next round will be available in spring of 2026. If you go to riverskatecollective.com, you can join up their email, and they'll send you an email saying, hey, the new ones are going to be able to ship. You can order them now, and you can order one. Check them out online, see what they are first. They sell for about $1,000 US, come in two sizes. The 120L is a small to medium for paddlers up to 160 pounds. The 150 is medium to large, paddlers up to 215 pounds. First inflatable production model, the Hovercraft, is the whitewater freestyle stand-up paddleboard you've been looking for. 5+ years of R&D, the patent-pending grab wings for unbelievable stability, whether standing or kneeling. This next-generation board that will take your paddling to another level. Boards are currently in production and being delivered in March. The model is available two sizes. The Hovercraft 120, 7 centimeters thick, by 6 feet 8 inches long and 31 inches wide.
They look pretty poofy. Mm-hmm. They kind of remind you of like new puffy sneakers these days that kids wear or whatever. But it's much larger than a sneaker, of course.
When I first saw them, remember when you were in learning how to swim, you'd lay on those flutterboard things?
Yes. Yeah, like a big flutterboard.
Yeah, it just looks like a much bigger flutterboard, realistically, with fancy bits and pointy instead of rounded and all that sort of thing.
And before you get to standing up on it, I can see people putting on a set of flippers and just going down, holding onto the grab handles and going down on your belly or down some rapids and stuff.
I think that's what makes this so
versatile.
Versatile, yeah.
Yeah.
The Hovercraft 150 is 7 feet 6 inches by 33 inches. So 2 inches wider and almost a foot longer.
Yeah.
For paddlers up to 215 pounds. Hmm.
Interesting, eh?
It is interesting. Each board ships with a hand pump and carry bag, which are included in the price. Your board will have 6 pairs of screw inserts on the deck for attaching foot hooks, sold separately, and twin fin removable fin setup. The inspiration, the concept draws inspiration from squirt boating, skateboarding, and the freedom of stand-up paddling, aiming to create a new evolution of river sport. So go to riverskatecollective.com. They're on the internet, they're on Facebook, they're on Instagram and YouTube. Just Google some of the videos and stuff and get a feel for it. I'm interested to see if this catches on or not.
Yeah, I'd be interested too.
They said they sold out, but they didn't say how many they sold out.
Yeah, they didn't say what the first... I imagine they would be cautious in the first order, and it's like, well, let's not do a million of them. And,
yeah.
But if they sold out, you know what? It's good advertising if they sold out. If they just did a preliminary, say, 60,000 boards or whatever, and and so it's interesting. It's I'm looking forward to see. You're going to know if they're starting to grab interest by seeing how many videos show up online with them.
Yeah. The other thing is, if it does catch on, over the next 10, 15 years, I want to see how much the board design changes. Is more input is given from the people that are, have gotten into it and say, hey, you know what? This is really cool, but you should do this or you should think about that and make these little changes, see what they do. I'd like to see how this the design changes over the years.
Exactly. Like they may put in some harder panels on the bottom because they may be getting pierced by rocks. And like look at stand-up paddleboards. When the first inflatables came out, they weren't that great a quality. They had to come up with new designs so they didn't just puff up like a sausage. So they had to internal threads to hold the bottom and the top, and then harder and harder under base and then surface to stand on. So we've seen a lot of changes in inflatable stand-up pedal boards. So I think we're going to see a lot of the same stuff with this.
I think it, with all that innovation over the years with stand-up paddle boards and inflatable kayaks and stuff like that, I think that sets them just that much further ahead in their development.
Yes.
So other, like I say, I'm interested to see how the designs actually change over the years.
Exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, we'll have to keep an eye out next year to see how many of these are out on the water.
Yeah.
Sounds cool.
I'll get an email. I'll get an email in the spring when they put out their spring models.
$1,000 US.
Well, I may not be buying one. I'm going to watch the videos.
I just want
it'll be a reminder that they're out, but I doubt I'm going to buy one right away.
Like I say, there's already a bunch of videos and that out there from them testing and everything like that. So if you're interested in seeing what it is, definitely go online and check out Riverskate.
Yes, very cool. They look very cool.
And something like this, I saw there was a quiz show from the UK. And one of the questions is, what is the best, the most fun thing to do with a walk? And one of the guys says, slide down a mountain on it. And they go, correct. They actually, some comedian said for a bet that he would go down some hill, you know, a big walk, you know, those things you do your stir fry in.
Yeah.
And it caught on. There's been, I think they said 17 world championships now.
Really?
One of the top guys is an Olympic luger, I think from Germany. Apparently it's a thing. And he puts ladles, I guess straps ladles to his feet.
Yeah.
So you're sitting in this walk with your feet sticking out, like you were lugeing or something. But then when his feet hit, it's these metal ladles are hitting. So my thing is, when is that going to hit the water?
Oh, there you go.
Right? A water walk.
It's my water spider.
Then anybody that does it can be called a water walker.
Yeah, or the water spiders.
Right? There you go. Quick, write that down. Somebody copyright that. But yeah, just somebody gets an idea for something and you're like, hey, this looks like fun. And they go for it, and that's how things start, man. That's how things start. Someplace we won't be going next year is the Boundary Waters.
Correct.
But for those dreaming of summer days in the Boundary Water, there is good news. Permit reservations will be up for grabs at the end of January. U.S. Forest Service announced permits will be available beginning 9 a.m. on Wednesday, January 28th. So if you're planning to go to Boundary Waters, you better have your plans ready to go, where you want to leave from, how many people you're going to go with, and all that sort of stuff, and be ready to call.
What is the number of people per day that are allowed to enter the park?
Oh, geez, I don't know that anymore.
Because they changed it, right? They
just changed it to... It keeps changing.
So it might be a little bit more tougher. There's 265 backcountry campsites, yeah. and you're going to have a lot of interest. A lot of people want to get there, and so it's going to be tough. When yeah. like,
well, that's it. You gotta be in there right away. The permits go from May 1st through September 30th. Can be reserved. Visitors can book reservations on the website recreation.gov-bwcaw. Before booking a trip, Superior National Forest managers encourage visitors to visit the Superior National Forest and the BWCAW websites prior to traveling to get information. Thoroughly review the BWCAW trip planning guide. Carefully consider whether a primitive wilderness trip is the best option for your group. Unique backcountry experience with no permit reservations or visitor use fees may be an option by checking out any of the 265 backcountry campsites. Plan at least 3 travel options, dates, and entry points before making a reservation. So, yeah, that's why you say, hey, if we can't get this day, let's do this day or this day, and let's check this route, or yes. this route. Have your options ready to go. Because there's nothing like getting in there and to be able to reserve. And what you want isn't reservable, and you have no backup to reserve. Because once you,
yeah, you need to
once
have
you
some
back
backup
out,
plans.
You're stuck in line waiting for
yeah.
another option. Reserve only the permits you can use. Choose an entry point that fits your skill level and a trip date that works for your schedule. When a permit holder makes multiple reservations in their name on the same entry date or has overlapping reservations, the Forest Service will cancel all but one permit without notification. A group leader can only lead one trip at a time.
There you go. That's
right?
good to know.
That's been an issue before where they're sucking up the reservations so that they can get something and then decide later where they're all going to go. And then they cancel what they don't need.
Yeah.
Right?
And so the park itself is going to get involved and say, okay, your trips are overlapping. There's no way you can do 2 or 3 trips at all at once.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to cancel a bunch of them.
Except one. You're going to go where we say you're going to go.
Exactly.
Do your homework. Look online for route planning guidebooks, trip ideas, and information. You can also contact local outfitters, guides, resorts, and cooperator permit issuing stations. Refer to the back page of the BWCAW trip planning guide for more information. So if you're looking to go to the Boundary Waters, you have to the 9 a.m. Wednesday, January 28th to have mm-hmm. all your ducks in a row.
Exactly. Yeah.
As opposed to my monkeys who are at a rave.
Yeah.
Yeah, won't be going there this year, that's for sure. That sucks, but what are you going to do? What are you going to do? So we talked about Uttarakhand, the rafters are going, like 900 rafters are going to get first aid and skilled training
yes.
and stuff,
all new
safety,
training.
All that sort of stuff, which they should have had beforehand, in my opinion. But so sticking with that sort of area, are you a non-Hindu traveling to Rishikesh for river rafting? Beware, you may not be allowed. The Uttarakhand government is weighing a proposal that could significantly change access norms at Haridwar's riverfront. So a lot of these things, I had to do some extra research here to figure out what they were talking about in that. And there's a bunch of history that goes way back to when the British ruled and all that sort of stuff. And there's a lot of raft operators that go right from the riverside, which some of them are sacred spots. Some of them
yes.
used to be sacred spots. And now they're trying to make this deal that a plan under consideration would extend an existing restriction at Harikupuri to all 105 ghats in the city potentially barring non-Hindus from entering these sacred spaces. So when you watch, you know, you're seeing towns in India and they the Ganges River, for instance, and they have those stairs that go down. People can walk down and get right into the river. That's what one of these ghats is that river access like that. So in this one area, there's 105 of them. And they want to potentially bar non-Hindus from entering these sacred spaces. And if approved, the move would mark a wider revival of an arrangement first discussed during the British period and could come into effect ahead of the Ardh Kumbh in 2027. So by 2027, if you're a non-Hindu... And I can say that a lot of these spots are where the river rafting operators launch from. You're not going. Ganga Ghats in Rishikesh are the stone steps leading down to the sacred Ganges River, serving as crucial spiritual centers for holy dips, ceremonies, yoga, meditation, and rituals with prominent ones, often offering serene experiences for devotees and pilgrims seeking purification and blessings.
Yeah, so they're just trying to protect their spiritual centers from... Mm-hmm. From a lot of people who, and whether it's valid or not, I'm not sure, but they find that a lot of people who are coming in for river rafting are leaving a lot of garbage and trash behind, and they feel that this is a way to keep the water as pure, as clean as possible, mm-hmm. so that they continue their, you know, using their spiritual centers.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we know that it's not only the tourists that come there and throw the trash. I mean, we've talked about that sort of thing before. Yep. Wait for the floods and all the trash just gets swept down the river and it's not our problem anymore. At present, limitations on non-Hindu entry apply mainly to the Har Ki Pauri, the most prominent ghat in Haridwar. Religious leaders and members linked to Ganga Sabha have urged the state to broaden the restrictions. Alongside this, the government is examining a proposal to formally recognize Haridwar and Rishikesh as holy cities, according to the reports. Officials are also studying the historical context behind earlier restrictions to assess their present-day applicability. So back in the British period, as they called it, were they saying we were going to limit access for a certain reason? And if so, what was that reason? And does that same reason pertain to today? So that's where they're sort of stuck right now in the research part of it.
And I think if you look into it, or if you, just from experience over the last couple years, there's been a lot of backlash against tourism in a lot of locations because there's just too many people overrunning tourist areas, and this seems like another part of it is they're being overrun by tourists that are coming in and not respecting the areas that they're visiting.
Mm-hmm. Backing the proposal, Ganga Sabha President Nitin Gautam says, "It is the need of the hour that before the upcoming Kumbh, the entry of non-Hindus should be banned at all Ganga Ghats and religious places." He welcomed the government's plan to hold a divine and grand Kumbh in Haridwar. He further said, according to the municipal rules, the Haridwar municipal area is declared a non-Hindu and meat alcohol prohibited zone, and the government should ensure complete compliance with these rules so that the sanctity of pilgrimage sites is maintained. That's the big thing with them. As you say, just the maintaining the sanctity of it and for religious reasons. They also claim that non-Hindus were living in areas by concealing their identity, adding that authorities should identify and remove such residents. If you get a bunch of people from India living there.
Yes.
And you can't tell which ones are Hindu and which ones aren't. So that's one of the issues they're running into. But when it comes to the river rafting, when you got 10 fellas coming from Canada to head on over and do some river rafting, they're going to be able to look at you and go, yeah, I don't think so.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're just not going to fit in, as it were. Not everyone agrees. Former Genghis Abba President Ashok Tripathi voiced reservations, saying bylaws of Haridwar Nagar Palika do ban non-Hindus entry into Har Ki Pauri area, except those on government duty. But personally, I'm not in favor of any such ban. Opposition parties also criticized the idea of a blanket restriction. I think they sounds like there's one group is all no exceptions, and the other is, okay, you know what, we don't want any, but we'll give you some.
Yeah, they're trying to figure out a way to make it work the best way for themselves.
Rafting the Ganga in Rishikesh offers thrilling rapids along various stretches from September to June, with operators near popular ghats providing adventure for beginners, experienced rafters, amid stunning Himalayan scenery, with Shiv Puri being a prime popular starting point. Rafting operators offer short, easy 10-kilometer trips good for beginners, longer 24-kilometer trips, and offering more time on the water and more challenging routes for advanced rafters. So if everything becomes non-Hindus only, any of those rafting operators that operate in that area, they're out of business.
Exactly, yeah.
Right? What do you do?
Well, you're going to have to find areas outside of the banned areas and set up new businesses elsewhere. But, you know, if it's a good rafting river, it's kind of hard to walk away from that.
Well, excuse me. Some of these ones are saying, like, these religious things are at the beginning of the year.
In 2027?
So, like, if you're... Well, not just in 2027, every year. Okay. So, if it's all at the beginning of the year, and then... Oh, no, I guess, yeah, September to June, not June to September. I'm used to our summers.
Yes.
So, September to June. So, yes, this would go right in through that, right? So, well, I hope they can figure it out and come to some sort of compromise.
But that works for everybody, yeah.
That works for everybody, but... You know, that's their country. They got to figure it out. Nothing we can do about it, except hopefully if you want to go there rafting, you can find a place that's not going to tell you, no, you can't be here.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless, of course, you're Hindu.
Yeah.
I don't know how you can... I don't know how you can prove that.
True.
Is there like... are they going to give like little exams?
Yeah, I don't know how that works.
Like, I don't know how they would prove... Because, I mean, right now they're saying there's a bunch of people there that aren't Hindu, but they're living in the area.
People from India are... Yeah, they just... Well, you can't tell, and you can just say what you want.
Yeah. Yes, I'm Hindu. Prove it. Prove I'm not. I don't know. That's their battle to fight, not mine. There's a lot of other places. My main concern is that those 900 rafting guys are trained.
They're just going to get trained up and now there won't be...
And then there won't be a job for them. Hey, congratulations on your training. You're fired.
Yeah. We're shutting down. We're cutting operations by 75%.
Yep. We talked a couple weeks back saying at some point... Somebody comes up with the idea and starts something, throws it out there, see who's all's interested, and takes it from there. Seven Towers stand-up paddleboard race in Lübeck, summer 2025.
Which is Germany.
Germany. That was the debut. So they said, hey, let's do this. And apparently it was... a success, and the date for the second edition has been set to July 18th, 2026. The Newport Marina will once again be a starting point for the challenge challenging circuit through the historic Hanseatic City. And second edition of the Seven Towers SUP race, or the number seven, the letter T, and then SUP.
7T SUP.
7T SUP. In Lubeck is on the agenda for many SUP racers in 2026 after the successful premiere in 2025, and it will continue on. So all it took is the one time. Hopefully everybody is interested. And if there's a lot of interest, then they go a second year, third year, fourth, and then 30 years down the road. Remember that very first one way back in 2025? First edition last year attracted over 80 participants to the start line, including athletes not only from Lubeck and the Hansebelt, but also from Hamburg, Berlin, Hanover, and even the Netherlands and Denmark. The marina, the Newport, proved to be the ideal venue for the race, which took place against the historic backdrop of the Hanseatic City, and was met with enthusiasm by both participants and spectators. So when you look a lot of these SUP races and stuff, they're out along a coast, they're out in big water, that sort of deal, right? This one was in the city.
Which is, it's a nice location. It's in the city. It's a different feel to it.
Mm-hmm. On the eve of the 2025 event, the first riders from the German SUP elite took to the opportunity to explore the course and familiarize themselves with the conditions on the race course. The Newport Marina not only served as a start and finish point, but its spacious boat deck also provided the perfect setting for the riders' meeting, where all participants were informed about the latest adjustments to the race. 7T SUP Race 2025 offered both ambitious professionals with international competition experience and recreational athletes exciting challenges. With a fresh breeze from the northeast, the participants also had to paddle against the wind in the choppy waters of the starting field in the first section. Passage of the Strandsalon and the tack into Holstenhafer Harbor then brought a welcome section with a tailwind thanks to the thermals. As the waterways could not be closed for the race, several boats from the THW and DLRG ensure the smooth passage at various narrow points. Lubeck's premiere of the 7T SUP race was very well received by most of the riders. I like how they say most of the riders.
What do they mean by that?
Yeah. 7 out of 10 dentists. Many spontaneously spoke out in favor of a repeat, which prompted the organizers to set a new date for 2026. The participants were particularly impressed by the attractive location and the exciting circuit through the historic city center. The Newport Marina will once again serve as the hub of the event for the second edition. In view of the positive response and the international participants from neighboring countries, an even larger starting field can be expected at the next event. Organizers are already working on optimizing the route concept and the supporting program in order to surpass the success of the premiere.
Cool. Right on.
So, yeah. So, doing a paddleboard race through the city center is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Right?
That
You're not
be,
just...
Eh?
Yeah, you know, you got the shoreline on the right, and then you got open ocean or whatever on the left. you got buildings and buildings, like going through a canal sort of thing.
And there's a lot of history there, too, a lot of historic buildings. And
yeah, it's pretty cool.
So, yeah. And between races, if you're not between races or during before and after races, you're in a very beautiful area to do a little bit of walking around and touristy stuff, check out some castles and
do some exploring while you're there.
Exactly.
All information under the-newport.com/7tsup. Go to that website and you'll find a lot more information about the new 2026 version. Say, 18th of July, 2026. Go over to Lubeck. Check it out.
Very cool.
You got any family there?
Not Yeah, there's some in Hamburg, but not in that area, not in Lübeck.
You can go check it out. Get yourself a paddleboard and try it out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
See, you got a place to stay.
Unfortunately, I don't know any German. My dad never taught me.
Blame it on your dad.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of racers and such, so I've had this, I don't even know what you would call it. I'm not against it. It just seemed to have popped up and become very popular, especially in the gym, with just regular people going to the gym. They used to go work out all the time. And now the powders, the gummies, the thises and the thats and all this stuff that people are using at the gym. And now you start reading stuff. And paddlers can use a variety of powders, shakes, and gummies for fuel, hydration, and recovery. Options range from electrolyte replacement gummies. Now, I'm sorry, but every time I hear the word gummies,
I know that I keep wanting to jump in and say, wait a sec, let's specify what kind of gummies.
Yeah, they're not the THC type, marijuana gummies.
These are like electrolyte replacement gummies. Yeah. These are for performance and for recovery and so on.
I cannot hear the word gummies and not think of like people that do recreational marijuana. You know, that every time, I go to the gym and I take gummies. Really?
What are you doing? Why are you doing that there?
Dude just sits on the bench. He's just imagining himself lifting 500 pounds.
Yeah.
For on-the-go convenience to protein shakes for muscle repair and energy. Now, see, stuff like this, I can see for athlete, like competitors and stuff like that. But I'm finding out there's just regular, ordinary recreational paddlers that do this as well. Now, I will say when I'm on a long canoe trip, I take the electrolyte powder to add to my water and my Nalgene to keep me when I'm getting hydrated all day. Give me those electrolytes, right? Keep them up. But the protein powders and gummies and all that other stuff, No.
If I'm doing something overly energetic, like a canoe race or something like that, I can't remember the brand, but there's some honey energy, it's like a squeeze bulb that you can drink at back, right? So there's that. There's various things just to give you energy to keep you going,
right?
Or to give you the boost late in the day type thing. But for the most part, it's like if I'm camping with a family, I'm just bringing like Gorp mixed nuts and trail mix and whatever. And so I don't bring anything else other than that. And like maybe that, like the kids will bring the little squeeze bottle of Mio, but that's just for flavoring. There's no added incentive
sugar.
Well, that's the kids like the pure sugar.
Yeah.
Right?
It's the flavor, right?
Yeah.
So powders are a versatile option. They can be mixed with water for hydration or made into shakes for a meal replacement or post-exercise recovery drink. Now, I know my son is big, but he does the squats and the power lifting and all that. Yeah. And like he's lifting 500 pounds sort of deal that, they definitely need the post-exercise recovery drink. I'm paddling for 5 hours. I don't feel I need that.
Yeah, you're just an endurance. You don't need the power lift.
No.
Yeah, unless you're paddling with a 150-pound paddle.
I'm paddling uphill both ways, whitewater.
Yeah.
Electrolyte powders, these help replenish essential minerals like sodium, potassium, magnesium lost through sweat, which is crucial for preventing cramping and maintaining performance during long paddles. They often come in single-serving packets for easy packing. Those are the things I do. I'll put those into my water bottle. Because if you've ever started to get dehydrated and you have to do a massive portage uphill and you start getting Charlie horses in your leg.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, you're getting low on electrolytes. Yeah. You need to, because you, water, the more water you drink, the more diluted that your electrolytes become. So you have less sodium, less electrolytes and so on in your system. And that's what can cause a problem later on. Because on a really hot day when you're sweating a lot and you can start see the salt stains forming on your clothes, it's like you're pumping out a lot of stuff and you're just, you're replacing it with fresh, clean water, which doesn't have all those minerals in it. So it depending on if you're on a paddle on a really hot day in July and it's 30 degrees, you're going to have to add some extras.
Mm-hmm. Protein powders are ideal for post-paddle muscle recovery and synthesis. Protein shakes can provide a complete range of essential amino acids and can be a convenient, low-calorie way to meet protein goals after a strenuous activity. 99 times out of 100, I am not going full out strenuous when I'm paddling.
No, exactly. Yeah.
Meal replacement shakes. For long trip to calorie-dense meal replacement shake can offer sustained energy with a balance of carbohydrates, protein, and fats. Some products like Perpetuum are specifically formulated for endurance athletes. Now, something like this, if you were doing like the Brent Run, right? And you're trying, and you're on a time limit, something like this might, like these would be good. But other than that, no. Gummies offer a portable, non-messy alternative to powders that can be consumed easily on the water without stopping. Energy carbohydrate gummies. These typically contain simple sugars, carbs, to rapidly replenish glycogen and stores and providing an immediate energy boost during exercise. That sounds like what you're talking about.
Yes. Yeah.
Electrolyte gummies, a convenient way to consume sports minerals without a full drink. They are designed to support body electrolyte balance and muscle function. Creatine gummies. Used to help increase muscle endurance and strength, as well as improve post-workout recovery. Creatine, isn't that the stuff in your fingernails, or is that the stuff in your hair?
Because
if it's the stuff in your hair, I'm going to start eating them.
No, that's something else. Creatine is what I don't know. I've never used it, but it's people use it for, like, you help. What does it help with? Joints and cartilage. And
yeah,
I don't know. I'm not a gym guy, but creatine is something for like that. Gives you that strength.
And, yeah, the muscle endurance.
Yeah.
Protein gummies, an innovative option providing protein in a chewable format, which can be a nice change from traditional shakes. It kind of reminds me of like the Flintstone vitamins. Innovative, chewable vitamins.
Yeah.
Considerations for paddlers. Convenience. Gummies require no mixing or shakers, making them highly convenient on the water. Yeah, my son's got like six of those shakers. You put the powder in, then you put the water in, and you shake them up. There's a thing on the inside that shakes around and spins.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Breaks up the powder lumps.
Yep. Hydration. When using powders or most types of gummies, it's crucial to drink enough fluid, water, before, during, and after exercise to ensure proper hydration and efficacy.
Efficacy.
Is that it? Efficacy?
Efficacy.
There's those words that you see, you know what they are, but when you read them, you just can't remember what they are. Yeah. Banned substances. If you are a competitive paddler, look for products that are HASTA banned substance tested to ensure compliance with regulations. That's the big one right there.
Yeah, if you're a professional, if you're a competitive paddler, and you're going to be doing, you know, pee tests and so on, you have to be careful what you put in.
Dietary needs. Many modern products are plant-based, gluten-free, or vegan, catering to various dietary restrictions. Ultimately, the choice depends on your specific need, energy, hydration, or recovery, the duration of your paddle, and personal preference for convenience. Like I say, these are becoming more and more prevalent out there. Yes. Like, I mean, you go to Popeyes here. Not the there's two Popeyes. There's the Louisiana Cajun place, which I prefer, or there's the gym place.
Oh, okay.
Right? They have all the powders and all that sort of stuff. You can buy them all online and all that. But for regular people that are going out, I really can't see why you need all this stuff.
Yeah.
Like I say, my only caveat is the electrolyte powders. You know, in the summer when it's hot and you're losing all that stuff, you need to replace the electrolytes and minerals and stuff like that, which are great in those little packets you just add to your Nalgene bottled water.
Yep.
So, but I'm not going to be getting in the protein powders and, oh, hey, no. I'm going to have a little old chocolate shake here while we're out in the back country. All right.
Yeah, it's a little excessive.
Anybody need a meal replacement shake here? Next thing you know, they're going to be bringing out their USB charged blender, throwing some veggies in there, and drinking a green shake. Exactly. Get my juicer out this morning, boys. Hey, there's Derek at the campfire. He's making himself a carrot juice.
Yeah, carrot juice with some pine needles mixed in. And
yummy. Anyway, there is the performance enhancer things are becoming, you know, more and more of a thing. They're leaving the gym and slowly making their way. And like I say, if you're a competitive athlete, I can see it. Like
it
a competitive
makes sense,
paddler. But for regular old people?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just need to replace some electrolytes and so on while you're out on a hot day. That's about it.
Yep. And that's what I do. In case you didn't notice, in the Northern Hemisphere, winter is here. Winter is here. There's a nice storm going on outside right now. That's why you're not here.
Yep.
Stepping outside during bone-chilling winter months is already a whole to-do, especially if you got to get your snowsuit on and your toques and mitts and scarves and 15 layers underneath. Yep. It would be nice if we could skip the sunscreen step in getting ready routine. While you may not like the answer, yes, you should still be wearing SPF year-round on your face. Good news is you can save a bunch of money on body sunscreen.
Exactly.
That's not really something people think about in the winter.
No, exactly. But think about all the, like, you see people who do a lot of skiing and stuff on sunny days. Mm-hmm. If you have the blue sky days and they put the white stuff on their nose because you get a lot of reflection off the snow, off your sunglasses. Yep. And a lot of people tend to burn their nose from the reflected sun off the snow and sunglasses and so on. So there is some need for it. But I think for the most part, if, like, I don't know, the way my luck goes, it's usually a snow day and it's overcast. Not that you're still not getting UV, but you're not getting as much.
Yeah. And we still do the paddle. Like Lake Ontario, we can still go paddling for the majority of the year and everything. So you're out there and on day, usually at that time of year, it's going to be nicer weather and the sun's going to be shining out there. So you're thinking, oh, well, it's winter. It's cold. Well, no, the cold doesn't affect
Exactly. You just can't feel the sun burning you.
Right. Dr. Benjamin Berenkin, Toronto dermatologist, medical director of Toronto Dermatology Center, was asked if we should be wearing sunscreen during the colder months. When it comes to whether winter sun protection is necessary, the answer is yes. Mainly if you are out and about for more than 30 minutes and just on the face and neck. Well, face especially, because half the time my neck's covered anyway. Well, the front is. I got that beard protection. We still get sun UV damage, although the sun is weaker and thus takes much, much longer to burn the skin. Although impact on wrinkles, brown spots, and skin cancer are still present. If you're planning on skiing or enjoying the mountains, it's even more important to ensure you're applying sunscreen. The sun is stronger and can even reactivate cold sores. Sun UV will bounce off water, ice, windshields, and snow and hit us. So it's important for anti-aging and anti-skin cancer effects to wear SPF when outdoors in the winter, too. When was the last time you wore sunscreen out in the winter?
Just as much as I wear it in the summer.
So never. Same goes for fall and spring. If you're outside for 30 minutes or more, make sure you apply SPF to stay protected on any area exposed to the sun. Some of his Dr. Barenkin's face neck sunscreen recommendations: Aveeno Sun, Aveeno Protect and Hydrate Face Moisturizing Sunscreen, SPF 50. La Roche-Posay Sunscreen Lotion, Anthelios Ultra Fluid Face Sunscreen, SPF 50 with broad spectrum. La Roche-Posay Body Sunscreen, broad spectrum SPF 50, and Neutrogena Clear Face Sunscreen SPF 50. So basically, whatever has an SPF 50 on the front of it, use it. Like I say, he says more for neck and a face. You can still get skin cancer and that in the winter.
Oh, absolutely, you know? Yeah.
So if you're out there and you're hiking or you're winter camping or you're paddling, you know, everything else is covered except for your face, usually, sometimes your hands. But definitely make sure you're putting that on to protect yourself.
And I think what it is just people don't think about it in the winter because they don't feel the sun burning their skin. They don't feel it burning. It's just like being on a boat on the water. You don't realize you're getting burnt because the wind is, you're getting windburn and sunburn, but you can't feel it because the wind's cooling you off.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things you got to be aware. If you're going to be out on a really sunny day and doing whatever you do in the winter, you still got to protect your skin if you want to, you know, not look like a shriveled grape by the time you're 70.
So what you're saying, if we do want to look like. You've been to Squamish, BC, right?
Never.
No, really?
I know where it is. I know where it is.
I thought you'd been there.
So no, I've never been to Squamish.
The District of Squamish has applied for a 30-year license to install a public kayak dock, marking the latest step in a waterfront access project approved by the council 2 years ago. Application now open for public comment until January 23rd seeks provincial approval under the Community and Institutional Crown Land Policy. Dock will provide residents with access to non-motorized water activities while protecting sensitive shoreline habitat from erosion caused by informal launching sites. Now, I've noticed that when the dock leaves down here at Rotary Park down the road from me, they have a dock that they take out in the winter. If it's not there in the fall or the spring, there's many spots that people launch from. And you can see it wears down the shoreline.
Yeah.
But once it's there, everything starts to grow. Everything changes. You can see that everybody is launching from that dock. So this is what they're trying to do, is protect the sensitive shoreline habitat caused by informal launching sites. Kingswood Crescent Developments are going to construct the facility as part of a land development agreement. Once complete, the district will own and operate the dock, which will connect a new waterfront park on the upland property. Council approved the dock location in 2023 as a requirement of the developer's agreement. The agreement has been submitted with the provincial application along with council resolution endorsing the project. It will feature a 15-meter gangway ramp leading to a floating dock measuring 18 square meters. It will be anchored to four steel piles driven approximately 15 meters into the channel bed, with collars preventing the structure from grounding during low tides. Launch ramp centered on the floating dock will allow kayakers to launch independently. They said the designated access point will prevent trail braiding and trampling of riparian vegetation along the shoreline. By providing a single entry point to the channel, the dock aims to concentrate use and protection foreshore habitat degraded by multiple informal launch sites. They're going to use prefabricated aluminum frames, polyethylene floats filled with EPS foams, and composite decking materials, which will be all assembled off-site and then transported and put together at the site. Pile driving required a small flat-bottom barge to drive those into the bottom. Access to the completed dock will be through the existing Scott Crescent Road and a new pedestrian walkway along the channel, both part of the Red Bridge development. And again, public comment period runs through January 23rd, 2026. But 30 years. I want a 30-year lease on that dock.
Well, you know, you got to look long-term. If you're going to spend the money that it takes to build one of those things, and if you want a long-term solution to, you know, preventing the ripping up of the shoreline, then it makes sense. It's like, yeah. Hey, listen, we're not going to do this for a one-year project. This plan long-term and get the dock in, right?
I think the one at Rotary's been there for 10 years now.
Yeah?
Yeah. And they bring it out every fall. They take it out and it sits at the edge of the parking lot. And then in the spring, they put it back in. And the thing about where they park it over in the fall on the parking lot edge, it's one of a couple kayak canoe unloading sites parking.
Oh, right onto the dock.
Yeah. if you're there for canoeing or kayaking, you can park there, take your boats off and stuff like that. And it's close to where the dock would be. But when the dock's not in the water, they put it on in those spots.
Right in the loading zone.
Right in the... It's like, I was going to park there today. Now I can't. So that'll be cool.
Yes, see that. It would be.
30 years. And a dock is there for 30 years. So
exactly.
Start kayaking, people. Boat, BOTE, industry leader in innovative paddle craft and water lifestyle gear, has announced the launch of the Coda Aero inflatable kayak. Sleek, stable sit-in kayak built for recreation and light exploration. Compact, lightweight, quick to set up, Coda delivers confidence and comfort for paddlers of all skill levels. We've talked about boat stuff before. They got some pretty cool things, accessories and whatnot, too.
Accessories and a paddle boards and so on, yes.
Built with boats proven Aero Ultra construction, the Coda Aero is available in 12-foot solo and 14-foot tandem models, featuring a shallow V hull and three-chamber design that enhances tracking, rigidity, and safety, and holds a class 1-2 river rating suitable for calm lakes, coastal waters, and gentle rivers. Sit-in design enhances control and security, while comfort-forward details including boat's softy neoprene seat, adjustable padded footrests, and EVA deck pads support longer days on the water. Front and rear splash guards help keep the cockpit drier, and integrated scupper drains allow water to be drained efficiently.
Yeah, I was looking at these online, and they're nice watercraft. It's an inflatable kayak, and it's a nice little setup.
Yeah, they definitely are. The Coda Aero kayak, also compatible with boat's ecosystem of accessories, including the Magnapod, the Kula coolers, other grab-and-go essentials, allowing paddlers to customize their setup with ease. Of course, everything's sold separately. Coda, our goal was to make getting on the water as simple and intuitive as possible, says Zach Eckert, general manager of Boat. From the lightweight Aero Ultra construction to the sit-in design with integrated comfort features, every detail was engineered to remove friction and help paddlers focus on the experience. So the new Coda Aero kayaks are available today at boatboard.com and in selected retailers, but we were looking and it seems they're sold out everywhere around here. The Coda Aero 12-foot solo, 12 feet, 36 inches wide, 11 inches high, capacity of 350 pounds, so yourself plus some gear.
Yeah.
Kayak weight is 30.6 pounds, seat weight 2.4 pounds, footrest weight is 1.7 pounds, has a travel bag, so when it's deflated, 39 by 21 by 13 inches, and the loaded bag weight is 50 pounds.
So, oh, they break it down into smaller...
smaller bits.
So if everything is packed away in the bag, it's a 50-pound bag of gear.
Yeah.
That's what you're dumping in your trunk of your car.
Yeah.
Which I assume is going to include the inflation equipment and
so
on. It doesn't come with a paddle, does it?
I would think it would. They don't say it does, but... yeah, it's not listed, but I would think it would come with a paddle. It's going for about $1,000.
Yeah.
The Coda Aero 14 tandem, 14 feet long, 38 inches wide and 12 inches high, capacity of 550 pounds. So that's two adults and some gear.
Yep.
Or one adult and even more gear, or one adult and their dog.
Yeah. There you go.
Right. Kayak weight 37 pounds, seat weight 2.4 pounds, footrest weight 1.7 pounds each. Travel bag is 41.5 by 23.5 by 15.5 inches. Loaded bag weight 62.8 pounds for $1,300.
Whew. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't find any equivalent that there's no, or there's a place. There's only two places in Ontario that I could see them. I didn't look out west, Vancouver and whatnot, but I was trying to find a Canadian price. And because, you know, you can't just convert from U.S. to Canadian.
Yeah.
There's also going to be other things that'll be added in.
Right, shipping.
So, yeah. And exactly. So it. I was trying to find something. But there's currently nothing available at like Bass Pro and whatnot. They Bass Pro carries boat stuff. And there's a place up in just north of that that carries boat stuff. So, but I didn't find any local prices. But I imagine come spring, as these become more popular, it'll probably wheedle their way into the Canadian market.
See, you can get one of these and you can get one of the river skates.
Yeah. I don't know that I'll be buying any of this stuff. I can't afford this stuff.
The back of your car is just going to be filled with inflatable gear.
Exactly.
If you want to check these out and want some more information on these boats and also the accessory stuff like the Magnapod and stuff like that, go to boatboard, B-O-T-E, board.com and check out all their stuff there.
Yeah, go check it out. It's interesting. The designs, they're interesting here. It is, they're just more... modern sleek style of what like a pack raft would be. It's more elongated, narrower and you know, lower waterline, but it's still an inflated watercraft and it packs away nicely in a backpack type bag. And so it's a neat little rig. It's a colorful setup. And so it's something you probably should get your eyeballs on their website.
I would probably buy one of the 14 footers just so that I had the option to bring the dog.
Yeah, exactly.
And, not that it's, you know, it's a tandem, but it doesn't mean I'm going to be bringing a second person.
No, exactly. So it's a way to carry some gear, bring a dog and whatnot, right? And and something like this would be great for if you live in a condo or if you live in an apartment or whatever, you don't have, you know, the place to store a lot of gear like most people with a home and a garage. So it's a great way to, you know, you could keep your tandem kayak in a pack in your storage closet or whatever, and you're golden, right?
Yeah, That's exactly what this stuff is.
And good and the for. Pack weight, once it's packed, it's 40 by 23 by 15 inches. That's not that big of a pack, right?
No.
It's big enough, but it'll fit in your trunk.
Yeah. Back so, seat, even.
Yeah, that's very cool. It's like, what, 3.5 feet by 2 feet by about a foot and a half high.
Yeah, it's not bad at all.
Yeah. Look at me. I don't know that I could do metric.
Look at you go.
We're so ingrained with inches and feet.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, they're neat. I was on the website looking at them, trying to find something in Canada, but so far nothing. But it's a new product out, and it's very interesting.
And your wife is happy that there's nothing here in Canada.
Exactly.
Because it means it's not showing up with one at home.
I have enough watercraft. I don't need to collect anymore.
No such thing. Well, that's all I got this week. What about you? Anything else?
No, there was something I wanted to mention earlier, but I forgot now. I should have wrote it down.
Yeah, think. Some days, I swear.
I know.
It was the ice. It was the ice and the rain outside that threw you off.
Yeah, you know what? At least I didn't have to drive through the. It's a mild ice storm, but it's bad enough that, you know, I'm confident in my driving, but I didn't want to tangle with all the idiots that are on the road.
Oh, just, yeah. That and you know what? That's it. Is there's people just lined up behind somebody doing, you know, half speed in the fast lane.
Yeah.
Like, dude, get over it. Because all you're doing is you're getting somebody pissed off back there.
Yeah.
That's about to do something really stupid.
Exactly. Creating a road rage situation.
Yeah. So
stay as far right as possible.
Yeah. But not as so far right that you're on the sidewalk. Because they frown on that, apparently.
Correct.
So I've been told.
Yes.
All right. Well, if you've got nothing else.
I do not.
See, and now you can go right to bed. You don't have to drive home.
I know. I'm already in my robe.
Now you'll know exactly what I feel like every Tuesday.
Exactly.
All right. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And you can download or stream all our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We will see you next time.